This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And the Dagoba Group, a global diversity and inclusion consulting practice with specialties in unconscious bias, leadership dynamics, and client engagement. Authors of the book, The Inclusion Dividend. More at thedagobagroup.com.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Today, healthcare on the presidential campaign trail. For the past few election cycles, the politics of this issue have centered around the Affordable Care Act, and 2016 is no different. Democratic candidates generally praise the ACA, although Bernie Sanders would like to ultimately replace it with a single-payer system. Republicans all say they'd repeal so-called Obamacare, although some favor certain aspects of it, like the rules around pre-existing conditions or helping the poor with medical bills. Meanwhile, some surveys show voters now care more about the high cost of prescription drugs than the law itself, and Granite State residents have brought drug addiction into this conversation about health care, with the topic coming up repeatedly in candidate town halls and now getting national attention. Today in The Exchange, health care on the campaign trail, which issues matter to voters and where the presidential contenders stand. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We begin with Rachana Pradhan. She's healthcare reporter for Politico. A little bit later, we'll be joined by Noam Levy, national healthcare reporter for the LA Times. Rachana, thank you so much. We really appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before we dive into this issue in terms of the presidential race, we should talk just a little bit, Rachana, about what's happening on Capitol Hill. The U.S. House is voting today on a bill to repeal key provisions of the Affordable Care Act. What are House members doing today?
So thanks again for having me on the show. So, of course, in Washington now, with January starting, it's go time, I guess, and things are back in full swing. Today, what's happening is the House is going to vote on a repeal bill to really gut several major pieces of the Affordable Care Act. Now, the difference with what's happening today is that, you know, the House, on more times than I think any of us can count, have voted to repeal the law. But today the difference is that prior to the House vote, which, you know, the repeal bill is expected to pass, the Senate has also done the same thing. And so Republicans, after today, will be able to say that they successfully sent the president a repeal bill, which they, you know, up until today have not been able to do.
So before this, Rachana, the House, and as you said, dozens of times voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act. This time's different because the Senate went along.
Right. So the difficult thing over the last several years has always been the Senate, because essentially what would happen is they couldn't get 60 votes, you know, Republicans, to repeal big pieces of the law. And so what they did is they employed this kind of legislative maneuver known as, in D.C. parlance, as reconciliation. And what that does is it lets them get past a filibuster. So no one can filibuster the bill, and they only need 51 votes to clear it. And that was a major obstacle, really, for Republicans in Congress, and especially, well, in the Senate. And they got past that last month. And so the House pretty much is not the difficult chamber to do this because, like I said, they voted so many times in the past to undo the law.
And all expectations, of course, Rachana, are that President Obama will veto this. But still, this puts lawmakers at least on record as they go out to campaign for their own districts later this year. They can
right.
say, I did this.
Right, exactly. So Yeah, there's no surprises that, of course, President Obama is not going to sign a bill into law that really guts his signature achievement. So I think what it does is it does help Republicans as they campaign for in this coming year to say that they finally voted to overturn the health care law that, you know, now is nearly 6 years old. I think it also kind of provides a preview perhaps for what might take place if, come November, a Republican is elected to be president. So I think, that's why this is important, even if it only seems symbolic at the moment.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. Rachna, if we could, please. How is this repeal effort in Washington that you just described reflecting out in the presidential race, especially in the early voting states, New Hampshire, Iowa, South Carolina?
So it might not, this also may not seem like a surprise, but pretty much, for every Republican running for president, even if they just give a passing mention to it, they pretty much have to say that they would repeal and replace Obamacare. And that's seen from all of the candidates. They have made that point. Some are actually more detailed in terms of what they would do. They wouldn't say, well, I'm just going to repeal the law, but here's what I would replace it with. Jeb Bush has, for example, a plan that touches on themes kind of lowering costs for the individual person and giving states greater flexibility to do what they want as opposed to things being more controlled by Washington. Senator Marco Rubio also touches on those themes, and he's also come out with an Obamacare replacement plan. So I think you will be seeing more of that, and it'll continue to be talked about on the trail.
Well, and we'll definitely get into some of that detail this hour on the idea of repeal and replace. And we've got a lot of detail, as you're hinting to, Rachna, about what some of the candidates say they would replace the Affordable Care Act with. Mm-hmm. I also want to hear from our listeners this hour. New Hampshire voters, how are you hearing presidential candidates talk about health care this year? What are some of the themes that you're hearing? Which of the ideas seem good to you? Which of the ideas seem, less attractive? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the Exchange, we're talking about health care on the presidential campaign trail. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And by the way, Rachna, just looking at this as a presidential issue, certainly we hear a lot of candidates talking about ISIS and terrorism and foreign policy, and a lot of talk right now about President Obama's gun control efforts and whether those are a good idea or not. What about health care in general, Rachna? How important is it as a presidential issue this year?
So I think for 2016, healthcare obviously is always going to be semi-prominent in any sort of election. Specifically, though, with respect to the Affordable Care Act, I think it definitely played a much larger role in 2012, and also with the midterm election. So in 2010, which of course was the first election that was held after the ACA was passed. You saw the divisiveness around the law really, really moving, I think, votes and how people voted in those elections. I think, like you alluded to this time, healthcare, of course, is something that all the candidates are going to talk about to varying degrees. But I don't think it's as much of a driving issue as some of the other things that you alluded to. Gun control is pretty high up there, especially with what the president, proposed yesterday by way of executive action. And, of course, there are broader concerns about jobs in the economy and also just national security because of everything with ISIS. So, it's definitely always important, but I don't think we're going to see, as much attention as maybe we did four and 6 years ago.
Yeah, I was looking at some polls this morning, and it's still up there, but you're right, Rachna. I think the economy was first, according to this Gallup poll I saw. Terrorism might have been second, guns third, and healthcare was four or five on that list. So still important, but maybe not as salient as it was 4 years ago, 6 years ago. I want to get into what some of the candidates are proposing on the campaign trail and what they're saying, Rachna. And just to make it easy, let's start with the Democrats, because there's a lot less detail there and a lot fewer candidates. So just real broadly first, Rachna, please, how would you describe the three candidates, Hillary Clinton, Martin O'Malley, and Bernie Sanders, just their broad take on health care and what should be done?
So, you know, of course, all three Democrats that are running for president defend the Affordable Care Act. They believe that it's the right thing at this point for our healthcare system, but there are things that they want to do to try to maybe improve upon it or, you know, even take it further, you know, like such as Senator Bernie Sanders, of course, has been a longtime backer of a so-called single-payer healthcare system, which you know, which is where the government basically finances the delivery of health care and provides universal coverage to all of their residents. His state of Vermont tried to do that. People thought that they would be the first state in the country to successfully establish a single-payer plan, but, you know, the financing difficulties around that made it so that the plug was pulled on it just a little over a year ago. So I think, you know, so usually, obviously, so Senator Sanders is a big proponent of single payer. Hillary Clinton, again, like, says she, you know, the Affordable Care Act needs to be defended, and there are so many positive things about the law, but she's actually gotten quite specific in saying what she would do to kind of move the ball forward and to improve upon it. One of those things is to help hold down prescription drug costs. Which,
that's an emerging concern. Yeah.
Right. So
on both sides of the aisle, sure.
Yeah, for sure. So as you said earlier, you know, there was a poll that came out kind of in the latter part of last year that showed it was done by the Kaiser Family Foundation, and it showed that prescription drug costs and what people are paying for them is now becoming the top concern among voters, and that crosses party lines, even among Republicans. They're finding that this is like their number one healthcare issue. So she, Hillary Clinton has come out with a plan to try to limit what people would pay. She's also broadly trying to build upon the Affordable Care Act so that people just generally don't have out-of-pocket costs that they can't afford.
Let's hear what she has to say, because and we'll also hear from Sanders as well. Here's Hillary Clinton, the Democratic debate in Manchester, New Hampshire, last month. And as you say, Rachna, she goes on at great length about what she sees as the benefits of the Affordable Care Act. But she also says that she sees room for improvement. Let's hear.
Out-of-pocket costs have gone up too much, and prescription drug costs have gone through the roof. And so what I have proposed, number one, is a $5,000 tax credit to help people who have very large out-of-pocket costs be able to afford those. Number two, I want Medicare to be able to negotiate for lower drug prices, just like they negotiate with other countries' health systems. We end up paying the highest prices in the world. And I want us to be absolutely clear about making sure the insurance companies in the private employer policy arena, as well as in the affordable care exchanges, are properly regulated so that we are not being gamed.
Again, that's Hillary Clinton at the Democratic debate in Manchester talking about health care. And today on The Exchange, we are looking at health care as a presidential campaign issue, focusing on what all these candidates are saying, how they would improve our health care system. You can join us, too, with your questions, comments, observations about what you're hearing from these contenders as they travel our state. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. So, Rachna, lots in that piece of sound that we heard. What does she mean at the end where she says, so we can make sure that we're not being, quote unquote, gamed, to use her words, by the insurance companies? What's she trying to convey there?
So one of the concerns, I think, just anecdotally, that people have been hearing about, you know, the new the exchanges, not this radio show, but the new marketplaces that the Affordable Care Act creates in every state, is that people are often facing very high copays, and they're facing very high deductibles when it comes to their health insurance. So they might have difficulty, even if their premiums are lower, they might have difficulty in affording their prescription drugs, or because they may have to pay a deductible that's thousands of dollars before their insurance kicks in. And that, you know, I think what she's getting at is that she wants to limit insurance companies' abilities basically to have, charge those types of out-of-pocket costs.
More regulations on insurers.
Yeah, essentially. I think over time, recently, over the last several years, and this is regardless of whether you're in these exchanges or whether you get coverage through your employer, which is how most people in America get their health benefits, there has been an increasing shift toward increasing consumer spending. And, that may come in the form of higher deductibles or higher copays. And that's just because the cost burden, employers are trying to shift more of it onto the individual as opposed to them paying for it. And so I think she recognizes that is becoming an issue. And so she's just trying to roll out some policy ideas for how she would contain that, of course. But they're not likely to perhaps gain a lot of support among Republicans because they kind of adhere to Democratic principles for how you would tackle this problem.
Sure. So. And, on her call for more regulations on insurers, we'll hear a little bit later in the hour from Republican candidates who say that the regulations are part of the problem, that's why costs are going up. But just sticking with the Democrats for a moment, Rachna, you mentioned earlier that Vermont U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders, while he has praised what the ACA has done so far, he does favor a big change in our health care system. Let's hear Senator Sanders also speaking at that Democratic debate in Manchester last month.
Why is it that the United States of America today is the only major country on earth that does not guarantee health care to all people as a right? Why is it that we spend almost three times per capita as to what they spend in the UK, 50% more than what they pay in France, countries that guarantee health care to all of their people and in many cases have better health care outcomes? Bottom line, this ties into campaign finance reform. The insurance companies, the drug companies are bribing the United States Congress. We need to pass a Medicare for all single payer system.
A Medicare for all single payer system. And as you mentioned, Rachna, Vermont approached trying this issue, but in the end decided it would cost too much. As I understand, Colorado was looking at this. Is that right?
Yeah. So Colorado, it's a little different what is happening there. But essentially, proponents of a single payer healthcare system got a ballot initiative approved for 2016. So for this year's ballot. So this is going to be a question that's actually presented to Colorado voters when they vote this year. I think the politics obviously in Colorado are quite different than those in Vermont. So we'll have to see where it goes. I think broadly the thing that created difficulty in Vermont when they tried single payer was that, like you said, they were going to propose a series of new taxes that would have been quite substantial. And that was very difficult, I think, for a lot of people to swallow. And so in Colorado also, there's going to be a debate about costs and how much this plan would cost and how people would pay for it. Usually it would be through new taxes on either wages or some other mechanism. And so, but it'll be interesting. The state hasn't actually taken a position in Colorado because this is it's a ballot referendum. So.
All right. Well, coming up, we will talk about the Republicans and their plans to, as you said, Rachna, repeal and replace. We'll hear some sound from GOP candidates talking about health care on the campaign trail. We'll also be joined by Noam Levy, national health care reporter for the L.A. Times, and we'll start taking your questions and comments. 1-800-892-6477. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, where the presidential candidates stand on health care this year, let's hear from you. New Hampshire voters, how are you hearing presidential contenders talk about this issue as they visit our state? What are some of the proposals that interest you? What are some of the proposals you want to hear more about? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. One more time, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Joining us from the D.C. area is Rachana Pradhan. She's healthcare reporter for Politico. Also joining us now is Noam Levy, national healthcare reporter for the L.A. Times. And Noam, thank you for being with us. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Well, we were talking with Rachana earlier about the broad issue of healthcare and how it's being discussed on the campaign trail. Before we get into too much detail, I'd love your thoughts on that too, Noam Levy, how you hear the conversation this time around.
Well, I think it's interesting that it's figured relatively quietly on the Republican side, I think. Which might be something of a surprise given sort of what an animating issue it is for conservative voters. Sort of an article of faith, I think, on the right that the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, needs to be repealed. But we've heard relatively little about that, and we've certainly heard even less about what Republican presidential hopefuls would want to do to replace it. On the Democratic side, I think it's actually been quite interesting to see the way Hillary Clinton has been talking about health care. She's been quite detailed and has not shied away from it at all, which I think is something of a contrast with Barack Obama, actually, who for the most part avoided it during his presidential reelection campaign. There's with some exceptions, but for the most part it didn't figure very prominently. Hillary Clinton has talked a lot about what the Affordable Care Act has done, and she's also, I think, pushed the conversation in an interesting and somewhat new direction by focusing on a lot of pocketbook healthcare issues, like the cost of prescription drugs and people's frustrations with the way their health insurance plans work and their deductibles and so forth. And at least at the moment, I think, to the extent that healthcare figures as an issue on the campaign trail, I think she sort of pushed the conversation furthest in a potentially new direction. And we may not hear a lot more before the general election campaign, but she sort of staked out an interesting position, I think, which may feature bigger in the general election.
Well, and speaking of new directions, and we talked about this with Rachana before the break, too, Bernie Sanders wanting to bring the country to a single payer, what he calls Medicare for all. I've got an email here from Ben in Hudson who says, I like Bernie Sanders' plan to move us to a universal health care system. Ben says, we're the wealthiest nation in the world, but we won't be called a civilized country until medical care for citizens isn't dependent on their bank account. Ben says, we'll be a greater country when the most vulnerable are empowered to contribute to our culture. Just real quickly to you again, Noam, what do you make of Bernie Sanders bringing this to the table, even though nobody else agrees with it, even the Democrats, Hillary Clinton and Martin O'Malley? What does it say to you that he's putting this out there?
Well, I mean, Bernie Sanders is very clearly and I think straightforwardly championed causes that are held dear on the left that have often been shied away from by Democrats who are seeking centrist voters. So I don't think it should be a surprise that Bernie Sanders is pushing for a Medicare for all, single-payer type solution. I mean, that solution has been cherished by liberals for decades. I suspect it will be for decades to come. You know, one of the interesting things about the way that the Affordable Care Act was implemented was it required Democrats, primarily, almost exclusively, to essentially give up on that dream and compromise with themselves about a solution that's sort of more market-oriented. You know, given the chance, I suspect most Democrats, Barack Obama himself spoke very admiringly about single-payer as a solution, but the political realities being what they are, Democrats weren't able to do it. I don't think Bernie Sanders is going to be able to do it either.
Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Today in The Exchange, as we look at healthcare as a presidential campaign issue, we're joined by two healthcare reporters, Rachna Pradhan. She's healthcare reporter for Politico. And Noam Levy, national healthcare reporter for the LA Times. And Rachna, to you first. Okay, so the Republicans. We've talked about the Democrats. In general, what do Republicans say that they want to do in terms of approaching this issue?
So when it comes to replacing the Affordable Care Act, kind of like Noam was saying, we don't have a ton of detail as to what the candidates would want to do, you know, if they did win in November. But we do have some ideas from some of the candidates, and really these are things that are oftentimes favored and have been repeated by Republicans, not just on the campaign trail, but also in Congress. So, you know, Jeb Bush, for example, when he says here's what he would replace Obamacare with, generally it focuses on lowering costs for the individual person. So one of the ways that he would do that is a longtime favored health policy idea on for Republicans is to open up insurance markets so that plans can be sold across state lines, with the theory being that if you increase competition, it's going to increase or decrease costs for people. So that, again, is not a new idea. That's been around for several years. One of the other things that he also has focused on is really, quote, you know, giving more flexibility to states, both with respect to how they would control their private insurance marketplaces, but also the Medicaid program, which provides coverage to low-income people. So those are the kinds of things that you tend to see. And then they also have ideas for Medicare that usually involve, like, injecting more private competition, letting private insurance companies introduce plans to, you know, make the market more competitive for seniors.
Well, and it's interesting to hear you talk, Rachna, because even though Donald Trump often criticizes Jeb Bush on the campaign trail, you're right. Actually, both of these men do talk about similar themes when it comes to improving health care, especially lowering costs. Let's hear first from Jeb Bush, again, the former Florida governor. Here he is laying out his health care plan on CNN in October.
I think we should have a dramatic increase in the number of people having health savings accounts. The basic coverage ought to be low premium, catastrophic coverage, where along with health savings accounts, support from government for people of low income and support from businesses, we provide coverage. But do it in a way that shifts power outside of Washington, D.C. and unleashes the innovative spirit of this country that right now is being untapped because of the FDA and the complexity of Washington. We can fix this, and we can lower costs, improve quality, and make sure that people have access to care.
So let's talk, both of you, about health savings accounts. Again, we heard former Florida Governor Jeb Bush talking about it, and we'll hear other Republican candidates talking about it. This is a favorite reform. How do these work, Noam Levy, and why are these so popular among the GOP this year?
Well, they've been popular for some time, and as many of your listeners probably know, they've been around for a long time for available to people who get high deductible health plans. I have one myself. They are a terrific vehicle if you have sufficient disposable income to put into an account that you can tap for your out-of-pocket healthcare expenses. So in a nutshell, the way a typical health savings account works for an employer-provided health plan is that the employee gets a tax-free account, sort of like a 401k, into which you can put pre-tax dollars, and then you can use a credit card that you is linked to that account when you go to your doctor's office or your hospital and pay your medical accounts. If you put even more money in it and you don't use it, you get to keep it from year to year so it can grow and you can invest it in the same way that you would a retirement account. Some employers will contribute something themselves in the same way that some companies contribute to retirement accounts.
So these are out there, Noam. People have these. You said you have one yourself.
People have them. And as I said, they're a good deal if you have the extra, if you can afford to put that money into that account, And if your employer kicks in some money as well, it's an even better deal. The nice thing additionally is that they stay with you. You can put a lot of money away into it. And interestingly, unlike a retirement account, which is taxed when you take money ultimately out of it, this money is never taxed. So if you want to keep it for 20 years and you want to invest it in the market, it will grow. And then when you use it for medical expenses, presumably when you're older and sicker, you'll never have to pay taxes on it. But because it's based on your taxable income, it is inherently, at the moment, somewhat regressive in the sense that it benefits people who have higher incomes. They're going to get a larger tax break on their income. And as I said, if you have the money to put into an account for your health savings, they're terrific. The problem, of course, with them is that a lot of people are living paycheck to paycheck in this country, and there's some question about whether you can build a whole healthcare system around accounts that require people to put money away for their medical costs.
Well, and as we've been saying, this is a popular idea when you listen to the candidates, the Republican candidates talk about this year. Another person who likes health savings accounts is Ben Carson, again, a retired neurosurgeon. Here he is in 2014 making his argument for a healthcare system more geared towards these health savings accounts. Let's hear.
It puts the care in the person's hands. They get to choose where they go, and it makes everybody of equal value. There's a variety of different ways to pay for it. For the indigent, we just use the same dollars that we use for Medicaid, and we distribute them into people's medical or health savings accounts. It will cost us a lot less than we're paying now, and it gets a lot of the bureaucracy out of the system. But more importantly, it brings the whole medical system into the free market economy. And that's what controls price, and that's what controls quality.
Again, that's retired neurosurgeon Ben Carson on the presidential campaign trail talking about health care. That's what we're looking at today in The Exchange. Some of the ideas that Democratic and Republican candidates are putting out there. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Noam and Rachna, let's go to our listeners now. And Michael's calling from New Hampton. Hi, Michael. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Have any of the candidates lately brought up tort reform, which was filibustered in 2005? And the whole point of tort reform is to eliminate frivolous lawsuits. And I understand that that is the plan that is used throughout Europe and in Canada.
You know, Michael, this is a good question. And Rachna, I know at the state level anyway, here in New Hampshire and in other states, there's been a lot of debate about tort reform or medical malpractice reform, whether it would bring down costs and so forth. What are you hearing on the presidential campaign trail about this, Rachna?
You know, so actually, I think tort reform, so I'll start first with actually what's happened in Congress. Back in 2012, I think it was, the House, which was controlled by Republicans at that point also, they passed a medical malpractice reform bill that would kind of do things like impose a cap that would, limit the amount of damages that victims could get. The other thing, though, I think this is an idea that's been supported, again, by Republicans for quite a long time. I actually haven't heard a lot of discussion about it on the campaign trail, although I wouldn't be surprised if eventually, whoever the nominee is from the Republican side, if they flesh out in more detail what they would do to, let's say, repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, that might be a component of it, because it's not a new idea. It's been out there, and it has pretty widespread support among Republicans, especially in Washington.
Yeah, Noam, what do you think? I'm with Rachna. I have not heard a lot of people talking about that this year, but it is an idea that's gotten a lot of traction in the past. What are you hearing this year, Noam, if anything at all?
I mean, it's sort of an article of faith on the right, as Rachna said. I mean, the issue with tort reform, and I don't know what the debate has looked like in New Hampshire specifically, but the issue with tort reform has always been that their independent analysts who've looked at it have found that it has the potential to save some money, but it's historically sort of been oversold as a solution to rising healthcare costs, that it would prevent some unnecessary medical care. It's certainly where it has been implemented in states like Texas, there's been some evidence that it has controlled at least malpractice premiums for physicians, which is a serious issue. But it's not in and of itself a solution to some of the big issues with cost and access to healthcare in this country.
Well, Michael, thank you again for the call. And again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. I want to play another Republican presidential candidate talking in some detail about this, again, repeal and replace, what he would replace the Affordable Care Act with. Here's Donald Trump on CNN in July presenting his vision for a healthcare system.
I want to be able to compete and go to a company in California, a company in Iowa, a company in New Hampshire, a company... and I'll get a good price. The only way the government should really be involved is they have to make sure those companies are financially strong, so that if they have catastrophic events or if they make a miscalculation, they have plenty of money. Other than that, it's private. You'll get great plans, you have great competition, everything else. Now, at the lower end, where people have no money, I want to try and help those people. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I want to try and help those people so they also... Now, it's not going to be like a good plan. It's not going to be like the finest plan that somebody that's made some money or has a good living can do. But you got to be able to help the people.
And again, that's Donald Trump on CNN talking about his ideas around health care. And both of you, that's another concept, this idea of competition across state lines. This is something also that has been talked about by these candidates and in the past. Noam Levy, can you help us understand sort of why health insurance isn't sold across state lines right now and the thinking behind how this might help lower cost?
So at the moment, all healthcare, like politics, is local. And that means that in New Hampshire, for the most part, if there's an insurance company, things are changing, I will say, a little bit. And I'm sure you've seen this a little bit in New Hampshire. But historically, I think New Hampshire had basically one health plan because that health plan developed a network of hospitals and doctors that were in New Hampshire, because unlike buying a book, say, on Amazon, where it doesn't matter where in the country you get that book from, if you're a consumer in Concord, New Hampshire, you're not going to go to the doctor in Sacramento, California. So health plans have historically been more locally focused because services are delivered locally. As a result, regulation of health insurance has historically been something that's been done by state regulators who are closest to the markets where people are getting their health care. And that's resulted in different regulatory regimes in different states. So the state insurance commissioner in New Hampshire is looking over what the insurers are doing in New Hampshire, and the state insurance regulator in Vermont and Massachusetts are each doing their own regulation. So this idea that if you simply allowed our patient in Concord, New Hampshire to buy from...
And no, I'm so sorry. I'm going to cut you off there for a short break, but I will let you pick it up in just a minute. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the politics of healthcare on the presidential campaign trail. New Hampshire voters, how are you hearing the presidential candidates talk about healthcare this year? What are you hearing? What do you want to hear? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also find us on Facebook or Twitter. One more time, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. And Noam Levy with the LA Times, I did want to let you finish up that point. You were explaining how, all healthcare is local because state regulators are looking at how care is delivered within their states. Go ahead, Noam, if you could, please, and finish up that point, how Republican candidates are saying, look, if we could break this open and compete across state lines, that would lower costs.
Well, the interesting thing about that is that the Affordable Care Act is to some extent allowing this to happen. And again, I think New Hampshire is a good example of this. I believe you've had some insurance companies from Massachusetts come into that market since the enactment of the Affordable Care Act. I think is Tufts Health Plan there maybe, or Harvard Pilgrim.
Yep.
In any case, this has begun to happen, and I think you're going to see more of this. And of course, more competition is good. The state regulators in New Hampshire now have to look at those additional health plans. But you know, to the bigger point about whether or not you can sort of get government regulators out of the business of looking at what health plans are doing, and per Donald Trump, just make sure that health insurers have enough money to cover their claims and then get out of the way, I'm sure it won't surprise you that it's a little bit more complicated than that. And any consumer who's gone to the doctor and had a problem with their health plan because their health plan won't cover something probably wants to know that there's a little bit more of adult supervision over what health plans are doing and how they're managing their claims and what they're deciding to pay or not pay than Donald Trump suggests is needed.
You know, in that Trump clip that we heard, and also in the piece we heard from Ben Carson and Jeb Bush, Rachna, I'll throw this to you. You do hear ideas and concern about helping low-income people pay their medical bills. But there are different ideas among the candidates about this. Some candidates, especially Ohio Governor John Kasich, did support Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act. How do you hear Medicaid expansion being discussed as these candidates campaign, Rachna?
You know, on the trail we have two governors who are running for president whose states both expanded Medicaid under the ACA. So as you mentioned, we have John Kasich from Ohio and then Chris Christie from New Jersey. And I think the issue, you know, and John Kasich has been a very loud defender of his decision. I think the issue that a lot of Republicans have with Medicaid in general, but also in particular the Medicaid expansion, is that they argue that it's an expansion of a program that's already not sustainable from a cost perspective. It's increasingly eating up more and more state budget dollars, and that eventually needs to be addressed. And I think there are also some issues, I think, just philosophically from the Republican Party with the Medicaid expansion, because they think that providing health coverage to low-income adults who don't have children and who have incomes especially above the federal poverty level, which granted is not a lot of money, but they just think that that just fundamentally is different than what the Medicaid program historically has been about. So Medicaid expansion, I think, on the trail it's not necessarily coming up a lot. I think the most times you'll hear it is when, you know, a governor like Governor Kasich or Governor Christie is asked about it and why they, you know, essentially broke with party orthodoxy and decided to do it anyway.
So Chris Christie as well as John Kasich, because you're right, Rachna, John Kasich has gotten attention for this. I have heard less about Chris Christie and Medicaid expansion.
I think usually how Governor Christie, I think, addresses questions about it is that he says, look, you know, unlike Ohio, which is pretty, conservative in that their state legislature is controlled by Republicans, and of course there's a Republican governor, Chris Christie is working with a legislature that is Democratic, and so, of course, it's not surprising that they would support Medicaid expansion. But I think, you know, he's certainly not the only Republican governor that has supported it. There are about 10 governors who are Republicans in states around the country, Michigan, Arizona, Arkansas being some of them, that have decided that this is something that's good for their state because of the amount of federal tax dollars that come to them. And also it's really provided coverage to, you know, millions of people, and it's helped to really, really drive down the uninsured rate in a lot of these places.
Well, let's hear more about that. This is Ohio Governor John Kasich speaking on NPR this past summer. And as you said, Rachna, he says although he would prefer to replace the ACA with a market-driven healthcare system, Kasich says the law has helped people in his own state.
I like the fact that we've eliminated pre-existing conditions. I think that's really important. But Ronald Reagan expanded Medicaid a number of times, and he didn't need Obamacare, okay? And my feeling about Medicaid is we've been able to manage this program. And by bringing Ohio money back to Ohio to treat the mentally ill, the drug addicted, and the working poor, we're not only ahead on an arithmetic basis, but we think it's the right issue in terms of giving people a chance and an ability to be lifted.
Again, that's Republican presidential candidate, Ohio Governor John Kasich, talking about health care. And today in the exchange, we're looking at what the presidential contenders this year are saying about health care. We're hearing a variety of approaches and ideas and plans. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Here's an email that just came in from Edith in Henniker. She says, my question is about so-called single-payer health care. Could someone explain again quickly what it is, who is covered, who is not? And finally, what would single-payer health care mean for the insurance industry? Edith, it's a great question. We could do a whole hour on it, but let's tackle it real quickly. Noam, if you could please, you know, what it is, who's covered and who isn't.
So single-payer means sort of different things in different contexts. In some places, single-payer means that the government runs the insurance company, but runs the insurance program, but doctors and hospitals are private. It could mean that doctors and hospitals become government employees as well. In our context, what people may be most familiar with is Medicare. Medicare is a single-payer system for people who are over age 65. The government provides that health insurance to people and in turn pays private doctors and private hospitals to deliver the medical care. Most of the time when single-payer has been talked about in the American context, it is essentially Medicare for all. Expanding that program so that everybody would basically be able to sign up for Medicare. Now, the one complicating thing here to your question about what it means for insurers is that even Medicare and single-payer is not that simple, because Medicare also has a very heavy involvement with commercial insurance companies that contract with Medicare to administer the benefits in the same way that if you work for a large employer, you might get your health insurance from General Motors, but the health insurance plan is administered by Blue Cross Blue Shield of whatever or United Healthcare. So a lot of commercial insurers now are heavily dependent on Medicare through what's called the Medicare Advantage program, and that program has been growing substantially. So Medicare for all might mean that everybody could get access to health insurance, but it might mean that you still would go to a private insurer to get your benefit.
So it wouldn't wipe out the insurance industry if it were a Medicare for all, no?
Probably not. Probably not.
Edith, thank you for the question. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477, email exchange at nhpr.org. And let's take a call from Hopkinton. Maddie is on the air. Hi, Maddie. Go ahead. You're in the exchange.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a young college student, and I've been really discouraged by the extreme positions that Republican lawmakers are taking on reproductive health care and blocking access to reproductive health care. It's 2016, and I think we should be making birth control and safe abortion more accessible, not trying to turn back the clock on women's health. So I just want to know how the panelists see this issue playing out this election cycle, and why do you think that this is still a topic of discussion so many decades after Roe v. Wade?
Well, Maddie, thank you for the call. And, you know, both of you, we have been focusing a lot on sort of insurance, Affordable Care Act, reforms, lowering costs and so forth. But she's right. This issue of Planned Parenthood and more generally access to abortion services is part of the overall health discussion. And I think, Rachna, the bill that is before the House today includes language on Planned Parenthood. Is that right?
Yes. So the bill that's being taken up today in the House, apart from, of course, pretty much gutting major pieces of the Affordable Care Act, also pulls Planned Parenthood's federal funding. And really, as your listeners probably know, especially over the course of the summer, there was a lot of attention on Planned Parenthood because of several videos that were released by this anti-abortion organization called the Center for Medical Progress. And essentially what they were saying was that Planned Parenthood was illegally profiting from sales of fetal tissue that are obtained from Planned Parenthood patients after they receive abortions. So that was in the news a lot. We haven't seen a lot of recent videos, although I think actually one was released this morning ahead of this House vote. So around the country, there has been some actions actually taken by states also to limit the amount of money that Planned Parenthood gets, New Hampshire being one of them. So I think, reproductive health issues they're always in the spotlight because of how, divisive of an issue it is. And so I don't think it'll be a surprise that we will see quite a bit of that for the rest of this year.
Probably hear more about it in the general election than during the primary. But Maddie, thank you very much for the call. And here's an email that came in from John who says, on the topic of the Affordable Care Act, any discussion of reform of the act, including tax deductions for private insurance premiums? John says employer-sponsored plans are pre-tax. Regulations specifically exclude insurance premiums. He says, I perceive this as a middle-class issue for those who do not qualify on the exchange for credits. So pretty specific there, Noam, but I do wonder about this idea of, using the tax system to improve the cost of health care.
So the tax system currently heavily favors, as your listener indicated, people who get their health insurance through an employer because mm-hmm. it's not taxed. Interestingly, most of the proposals in the discussion about changing the tax treatment of health benefits have focused on going the other direction, not making more tax breaks available for people, but making less. So the Cadillac tax was a part of the health, the Affordable Care Act that got a lot of attention. It was very unpopular. It was supposed to go into effect in 2018 and tax very high-cost health plans. That's something that Republicans have historically liked to do as well, to change the way those tax benefits are provided. The assistance that's provided through the Affordable Care Act provides subsidies for people making up to four times the federal poverty level, which is not an insubstantial amount. I mean, for a family of four, that's close to $100,000 a year. That obviously means more in Nebraska than it does in Greater Boston, for example. But one of the ways that Republicans have talked about extending additional assistance, say, to middle-class people who make too much to qualify for the tax assistance that's made available through the Affordable Care Act are health savings accounts, which we talked about earlier, which presumably would be available to anyone regardless of income, a way to put away tax-free money to pay for medical care.
I want to return to a subject that we touched on briefly earlier in the program. And Rachna, that's again the rising concern over rising costs of prescription drugs. And as you discussed, some polls now show that people care more about this issue than they do about the particular ins and outs of the Affordable Care Act. Just remind us what's going on, Rachna, why this issue of prescription drugs is coming to the forefront now.
A couple of reasons as to why this is coming to the forefront. I think probably it's no accident that several of the presidential candidates, really on the Democratic side, have been raising this as a problem. I think Hillary Clinton has said that she's heard it as she's been campaigning in Iowa and New Hampshire and in, early primary states. I think Senator Sanders, before he was running for president even, he was a big advocate of restraining prescription drug costs and, using certain policies to try to limit how much drug companies charge people. I think lately a lot of the intention also has been because increasingly you're seeing situations where pharmaceutical companies will take drugs that previously were, cost much less and the price is being raised exponentially. And it's happened with more than one company, and I think voters are expressing outrage that they would have to pay so much for their medications. Kind of generally also on the issue of cost, you know, Hillary Clinton has alluded to this when she's been releasing her policy proposals. I think there is a shift, generally speaking, regardless of how you get your private insurance, whether it's through your job or whether it's on these new Affordable Care Act marketplaces, that people are being faced with higher costs that they have to pay out of pocket for certain care. And of course, prescription drug access is just a really big issue. And in the U.S., you know, we do pay more here than other developed countries around the world. So,
well, and real quick to you, Noam, you know, bipartisan frustration that I hear expressed on the campaign trail about this. Any bipartisan solutions on this, Noam?
In a word, probably not. You know, Democrats traditionally have favored, and Hillary has proposed, using Medicare's bargaining power to negotiate lower drug prices for Medicare beneficiaries. And pharma is extremely powerful, very influential in Washington, particularly with Republicans. And Republicans have historically opposed additional price regulation of pharmaceuticals. I don't expect that to change anytime soon. It should be said that a number of the Democrats also, who take a lot of money from drug companies, have opposed that. But historically, price regulation has been something that's been very, very difficult to get through Congress.
Well, both of you, lots of ideas and lots of candidates this year, so I really appreciate you taking the time to help us sort through this. Rachna Pradhan, thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Noam Levy, thank you too.
Good to be with you. Thanks.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.